Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick for the Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. Did you miss me? Because I am back. Hey, soccer fans, great to be back with you at Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. I think the last time I was doing recaps for you and talking with you, we were still Sons of a Pitch, an American soccer podcast. But kudos to Mike, credit to Mike for taking this channel and running with it and making it something that I never thought we could have when we were recording podcast episodes in my garage and Mike's RV. But I am officially back. I will be running the weekly recaps. Mike has brought me in, and I'm thrilled to be here talking soccer with you all again. We are trying a little bit of a new format, so I'm pre-recording these videos Sunday evening, Monday evening, after the weekend games. That way, we can get you all the good details. I got my notes ready to roll, and we can also, Mike and I, jump on into the chat and kind of better facilitate and interact with everyone during the premiere of the video. And if you remember me, again, I've helped found this channel with Mike 5 years ago. It's crazy to think that this has been going on, that Sons of Pitch have been happening about 5 years now, and took a little hiatus. It's been about a year, and I am happy to be back helping out. But I got to do my homework here, got to do the housekeeping, right? Be sure to like, subscribe, as well as share the link and keep the conversation going for soccer in America, for Sons of a Pitch, for MLS, for USMNT. Keep the conversation going. Also, make sure you follow along on Twitter at SOP Soccer. And if you like what I do tonight and you like hearing me talk about soccer and if you like interacting with me, then you can also subscribe and follow along at my other channel, Wife Children House, wife.children.house channel over on YouTube. I am doing weekly Chicago Fire recaps as well as some other soccer sketch comedy. If you want to see the Fire recaps, just do a search for Backdraft Chicago Fire Recaps. It's the name of the segment. And you can also connect with me on Twitter at Wife Kids House. Now, you know I do like to talk a lot, those of you who remember me. So let's get right into the action here, talking about all things in, I think, match day 7 already for the MLS. Now, you're going to have to bear with me just a bit as I learn some of this brand new technology that Mike has put in play for us here at Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. So here we go. The first game of the weekend, Montreal hosting Vancouver and taking care of business 2-1. As I put out on Twitter, thank you for scheduling Montreal and Vancouver together. I get my quota of Canadian soccer all in one game in the first game of the weekend. We got our goal scorers here, Jordy Mihailovic and Romel Kyoto for Montreal, and Brian White for Vancouver. The star players turned up and found the back of the net for these teams. And Mihailovic doing it in the first minute. And as someone who has been following the Chicago Fire for a few years, I do miss him. I do miss him. I mean, he had the goal and the assist, and the guy just made plays. And for you USMNT fans out there, start the rumor mills now that Jordy might get a call-up, even though Greg Berhalter has said he wants to stick with the guys that he has already. Now let's scroll through and look at some of the statistics here. Fairly even possession game, 54 to 46 in favor of Montreal. But here's where the difference was. Look at those shots. 12 shots for Montreal, only 6 for Vancouver. So Montreal getting it done in the offensive side of things, as well as dominating the passing, right? 486 to 383, an extra 100 passes. That is a lot of extra time and a lot of extra possession, that extra 5 to 10%, right? They also were winning their duels. Usually these are more even, and we'll take a look at this across the league throughout the week. Usually these are a little more even, but not the case in this game. So you could see Montreal was dominating. And the fact that Vancouver had 7 more fouls shows they were kind of on the back foot in defending. A couple notes that I had on this one, the Whitecaps had a late equalizer, and there was drama in the stadium. they were going nuts. Vanni Sartini's jumping all over the place. And man, I wish the call would have stood just so he could have had that moment of celebration, getting on his knee, fist pumping. It was great. But VAR deemed the play offside, and it was the correct call. But man, it's so fun watching Vanni Sartini get pumped up. What's great, though, looking kind of big picture, Montreal is above the playoff line, and they look more like a playoff team the way they're playing than some of the teams just behind them in the standings. Columbus, New England, Cincinnati. I think Montreal right now is a better team than any four of those. And that's, am I going out of limb on saying that? Probably. But you know what? They're ahead of them in the standings. They're playing great, and they've got their stars doing it for them. Now let's get to the next match of the weekend. San Jose hosting new Western Conference team Nashville. Not a new team. They just moved to the Western Conference. And I think Nashville is going to have something like the most miles traveled out of any American professional sports team ever. Yeah. Anyway, 2-2 draw in this one. Look at these goal scorers here. Ebo Bise and Mukhtar with a brace each, going back and forth, trading goals on this one. Now let's check out the stats here. Heavy possession for San Jose, 66-34, but we know Nashville does like to play more defensive. Shots and shots on goal. Shots on goal even at 5, but yep, San Jose, 17-8. You can see they had that offensive mojo flowing. And look at these passes. They were establishing a lot of presence in the offensive areas, it looks like. 589 passes to Nashville's 304. Looking at some of the other stats here, you can take a glance here or head on over to MLSsoccer.com. But you can see that San Jose controlled the possession, but Nashville kind of controlled the game, right? The crazy thing about this was Mukhtar could have had two more goals if he would have just had a little bit more of that finishing touch. Yeah, I'm being nitpicky. The guy had a brace. But, you know, he was in the six. He was prowling about. He had a couple good shots as well that were saved or just off target. This could have been a much bigger game for Nashville. The other thing that stood out to me from the San Jose side of things, other than the fact that they're getting Ebo Bise scoring and feeding him the ball, I do not miss Jackson Ewell on the USMNT, not one bit. And maybe this is just from the clips that I saw of the game. I didn't get to watch the full 90. He just looked like he was always behind the play a little bit. Also, last thought on this one. Watching the highlights, man, I felt bad for San Jose goalkeeper JT Marcinkowski. His defense let him down. You know, the aforementioned Mukhtar having a couple more solid opportunities inside the 18, inside the 6. His defense let him down, and he bailed him out on a couple of occasions at least. So, Marcinkowski, good on you to keep this a level game with the teams splitting the points. Let's get to the next match here. Atlanta hosting Cincinnati. Man, did I think Atlanta was going to win this game and use it to kind of get back on track. We know what's going on with Joseph. He is not playing. He messed his knee up again. And you know what? He may be out for an extended period of time. Definitely get on over to MLSsoccer.com and find those articles about Joseph. But here, taking a look at the game breakdowns. Again, Atlanta, heavy possession favorites, dominating the shots. Cincinnati didn't even have a shot on goal. They had 262 passes. That's some of the least amount of passing that I've seen in recent history. And you know what? It didn't matter. They come out of Mercedes-Benz Stadium with a point, a 0-0 draw. Atlanta just seems to be kind of holding on, kind of trying to stay competitive on the round that playoff line until they can get some extra signings in. But man, it looks like they're starting to break if they can't put away a Cincinnati team. Also, the rumor came out that Atlanta United is interested in U.S. international Matthew Hoppe. I think he was playing, I want to say Valencia, but I don't believe that's it. But his team overseas is fighting a relegation battle. They just signed him for over $5 million in transfer fee. Definitely not Valencia. So why would they get rid of him? But yet, it is rumored that Hoppe is getting interest from Atlanta United and at least one other MLS club. And man, he would definitely help the Atlanta attack. Also of note for Atlanta, goalkeeper Brad Guzan goes out in the 71st with an apparent Achilles injury. Hopefully he's okay. My dad tore his Achilles, and man, did it mess him up. Now, my dad did play college soccer and played a lot of rec league soccer after that, so maybe it was just those miles are finally getting to Guzan's Achilles and ankles and feet. But hopefully he comes back and it was just a precautionary move. The other thing, Brandon Vasquez, the hot striker for Cincinnati, hot in the sense that he's scoring goals. Let's make that clear. Cannot find the back of the net in this game, kind of cooling off the talk of he's got to come in for the next USMNT camp. Again, Berhalter said he's going to stick with the guys he has so he can build better chemistry with them. But hey, Vasquez could not find the net against this Atlanta United team. Moving right along, now we're going to stay in the Western Conference for this next game. Houston draws Portland 0-0. Of note, Teenage Hadebe picks up that red card in the 75th minute. He had a bright start to the season, but unfortunately cannot complete the game due to that red. Now let's take a quick look at the stats on this one, right? We have Houston with only about 45-ish percentage of the possession, Portland being a little bit more dominant in possession, but shots are even at 14, and Houston has a couple more shots on goal. A lot of passing in this game, which is fantastic, and high passing accuracy. I think that's typically where you see the better passing teams, kind of in the mid to upper 80 percentile of passing accuracy. But 12 corners for Portland, and they could not find the back of the net on any one of those set piece plays. That is a little disappointing, without a doubt. However, we look at the duels, Portland dominating the duels and the tackles, and their keeper comes up with a handful of saves here. Now, a couple notes I had on this one. Man, Houston actually missed two first half breakaways, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, Ivicic? Anyway, I'm sure, Rocky, if you're out there, let us know how to pronounce that. But it was great goalkeeping. He did everything he needed to. He waited till the last minute to rush out, cut down the angle, got some hands out there. Great goalkeeping, especially getting a hand on one in the 64th minute to push that shot just off of the far post, to push that point blank header away. So excellent goalkeeping to preserve a point for Portland. Now this game was begging for someone to score, right? They were begging for someone with that finishing touch. So many shots should have gone in, but for just a bit more quality. One thing I want to point out here for the Houston Dynamo, Teenage Hadebe, who is this guy, right? Comes in, offseason signing, very unique name. Of course, it's going to perk up a few ears. So I just did a quick look online, and he's a 26-year-old defender from Zimbabwe. So he is in his prime, coming into his prime as a defender. He's actually been playing pro since 2012. Which means, if I can do math right, so he's been playing professional soccer since about the age of 16. And he's played in Zimbabwe, South Africa, and most recently, Turkey. So keep an eye on him. I think he had a great highlight reel goal last week. Definitely has a workhorse, strong motor. Make sure you keep an eye on him, especially you Houston fans. Get to know this guy really well. One last thought. I didn't even realize Houston had signed former Portland goalkeeper Steve Clark. And he made some great saves for Houston during this match here. So, Portland fans, let us know what you think about Clark heading down south, getting over to Houston, putting on the orange, and about his performance in this game today. Let's jump in to the next game. We've got the New York Red Bulls hosting FC Dallas and hosting them to a 0-0 draw. I really thought the Red Bulls were going to get a win on this one. No offense to you, Dallas fans. No offense to you, Texas people, but I really thought the Red Bulls were due for it. They've been kind of coming together. I really thought they were going to get a big win here, especially coming home. They dominated, not dominated, but they had most of the possession. 20 shots, 7 on goal. Like, they played really well and created some offensive opportunities. In fact, let's even go further down our stat sheet here, and let's see if we can find the XG on this one. And man, credit to MLSsoccer.com for putting all these advanced stats out here. Yeah, here we go. Red Bull New York, 1.6 expected goals. They should have bagged at least one, should have come away with 3 points in this one, but unfortunately cannot find the back of the net. Now, I want to check the standings on this one because I want to see exactly where the Red Bulls are right now and whether or not we should be concerned about the Red Bulls of New York. They are sitting third in the standings. They have 3 wins, 2 losses, and 2 draws. 10 goals scored in those 7 games, and they've only allowed 6, so not too terrible. So I don't think we should be too worried about the Red Bulls, but look at this. No home wins. All their wins have been on the road. That's why I thought they'd come home and finally get one against Dallas, but nope. So I don't think we should be worried about the Red Bulls, but I think we are waiting for their attacking players to really hit that next level. Amaya, Lukinius, Caceres, all good players, all playing very solid for New York right now, but I'm looking for them to get the next level. Meanwhile, Dallas, for comparison's sake, let's go down to the Western Conference. Dallas sitting in fourth right now, getting that first round bye if all things ended today, but I think they're still kind of finding their consistency, right? They're playing great at home, struggling on the road, scoring goals similar to the Red Bulls. So this was actually a pretty good matchup for both teams, kind of as a measuring stick, especially if you want to look cross conference here. I still think Dallas is trying to find their consistency, especially when you have Jesus Ferreira with a hat trick 1 week and, you know, no goals the next week. So keep an eye on Ferreira and Dallas. Keep an eye on all those upcoming stars for the Red Bulls as we continue moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, the next match, I know one our friend Connor might not be too thrilled about, but got to talk about it. Connor, let us know how you're feeling in the chat. And if you guys are fans of the Crew or just want to get more Crew coverage, go check out Connor McCabe. Connor knows on YouTube, and he does a lot of Columbus. He's actually starting to get into Columbus' second team, their MLS Next Pro team. So you'll be able to check out everything on the pipeline over there. But for this game, Columbus hosting Orlando and losing to Orlando by a score of 2-0. Real quick, looking at the stats here, Columbus had the possession. They had the shots. They had the passing. They had the passing accuracy. Did they have the expected goals down here? They did not win the expected goals battle, but they still should have come up with something if you are going to follow the advanced stats, right? But really, the Crew right now are just hard to watch. And they're still starting Miguel Berry over Jesse Zardes. Now, I understand people don't like Zardes. I think that's more of a national team kind of bias than it is a Columbus Crew bias. But you know what? If you're not going to trade Zardes, play him. Play him. They talked about it on MLS Extra Time, the official league podcast. I'm a big fan of Jesse Zardes. You know what you're going to get with him. Berry's kind of coming into the league a little inconsistent. Get Zardes up there or dual striker. Do something, right? You're not scoring goals. You're not winning games. Oh, Columbus. Got to figure it out. Meanwhile, Orlando is finding a nice little groove here, right? Erson Cara has goals in back-to-back weeks. And even though Pato didn't play this week, you saw his creativity and what he could do to change a game when he played against Chicago last week. A good Chicago defense last week, mind you. Now, I think Orlando is only going to get better, and they're already sitting pretty high up in the standings in the Eastern Conference, right? Here we go. Second place as of today with 8. The only thing you could hold against them is they've got that extra game, and their points per game is still good relative to the rest of the league. But if you are going to be top 4 all season, you want to be around that 2 points per game. So Orlando's got a little bit of room for improvement, but I think that they can get there. Now, we're going to move right along here to New England and Charlotte. So New England gets that long-awaited win, 2-1, over a good expansion side in Charlotte FC. Goals by Buxa and Polster, and that Buxa goal in the 8th minute, that is exactly what New England needed to get started, to get that confidence back and kind of put Charlotte on the back foot for the remainder of the game. And Charlotte, to their credit, they battled to the end. They pulled back one in the 85th minute with that goal by Ortiz, but not enough to salvage a point from New England. What's really interesting is that New England only had about 40% of the possession in this game, yet was still able to generate 13 shots, 6 of which coming on goal. So we are looking here at the statistics where Charlotte was just knocking the ball around with great accuracy. Now, something like that suggests to me that their passing is in the defensive third or in the middle third of the field more so than sustained offensive pressure. I didn't get a chance to watch this game, so let me know if my reading of the stats matches up with the eye test for any of you who got to actually watch it. But here we're looking at some of the shooting breakdown. You're seeing New England loves getting in the box. They are taking so many opportunities from inside the box, high percentage chances, and that should translate into a higher expected goal. Yep, 1.2 expected goals. They exceed that. Meanwhile, Charlotte, 0.3 expected goals. So not high quality chances for the ones that Charlotte got. Now, this is a big win for New England. They've been struggling. They've been needing something to hang their hat on to kind of kick off, re-kick off this season, right? And get back into a groove, get back to their winning ways from last season. And after last week, Charlotte's Karol Swiderski, you know, kind of becomes a dark horse favorite for the Golden Boot race, but is cooled off in this game against New England. Now, New England only gets their second win of the season, and it temporarily takes the heat off of Bruce Arena. The reason I say he's on some heat, he might be getting on the hot seat, whatever. New England, Supporters Shield, record-breaking season last year, not off to a good start. Kind of flames out of the CCL, as well as, you know, not struggling in the league play. What I think is a big part of the problem, it's not Bruce's coaching, it's not the environment, it's just they lost players. You cannot replace Tajon Buchanan and Matt Turner with Sebastian Legit and Josie Altidore. You just can't do it. Depending on what your feelings are for those players, they just were not at that level or at that level of contribution for the Revs than Buchanan and Turner. So with that, everyone, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from John Donovan on the Chicago Fire. If you're on the podcast side of things, if you're on the YouTube channel things, make sure you do jump over to Anchor FM. Find us on the podcast. That way you can take us wherever you go if you don't want to burn your data watching YouTube videos. And you can listen to John Donovan's recap on the Chicago Fire, as well as, you know, hear all the great other content that we are putting out there on the podcast channel. Now, right now, we're going to take a short break here on the YouTube side of things. Stay tuned. Get a quick refill. Get to the bathroom. We got a lot more soccer to cover here, people. Thank you.
This MLS Weekly Recap is sponsored by Skira, Icelandic spring water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring in a nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, yes, pun intended, it's one of the best. Get some Skira today at your local 7-Eleven. And now it's time for our weekly Chicago Fire update, brought to you by John Donovan. Take it away, John.
Nick, John Donovan here, covering the MLS and the Chicago Fire. It is great to have you back, Nick. You too, you and Mike are a great combo. Really glad that you're back in the game. In talking to you, whenever I have the chance to talk to you, you're an encyclopedia of the game. You're a great host, and I think we're going to really take this thing to another level. So the Chicago Fire tied the LA Galaxy 0-0. And in all honesty, I was so intensely watching some of those players on the game and how the game was flowing. I was shocked about the 70th minute, and I saw the score. It was still 0-0. I mean, LA Galaxy was on the fire. They were dangerous. The thing is, the Fire have really a good defense. I mean, thank the Lord C.J. Brown is there, and he's pushing those guys. He's got them super coordinated. Rafael Sejnov, I'm sorry, I'm always struggling with that name, has added a lot, and Olmsberg is one smart center midfielder. There's going to be a day that man's playing for the U.S. He's very controlled, and Miguel Navarro, hot temper. He's got that Latin temper. He played down in Venezuela, but he's fast. He goes the whole 90. He's a ferocious attacker out there. Those three guys have really done a good job. Sekulak, I think his value is in his crossing, but he just didn't have it this game. He couldn't find Shabilko or Ivanov or Bornstein. I mean, it's kind of sad when you've got a forward line that had zero shots on goal. So we have a wonderful back four. They're doing a good job. The midfield that we're putting out there, Federico Navarro from Argentina, great defensive guy. His passing is weak. I don't know the statistics, but he had a number of blown passes that just went out of bounds. Pineda, our Mr. Steady from, I believe he's from Bolingbrook, played a good game, but, you know, it's a lot of pressure on him. Said something to a referee, gets another yellow card. And you got to play under control. One of the most greatest coach I ever played for said, do not talk to referees. You never win. And that's true. They respect players that keep quiet and keep the game going. So this constant MLS talking to the referees is stupid. You look at the premiership, the guys walk away from referees. You don't see this huddle and arguing. It's just not happening over there. They're pros. Our guys are pros, but they like to blab, and that's just destructive. Talking yellow cards, my guy Navarro, it got suckered into a yellow card by Chicharito, where Chicharito was laying on the ground and laughing at him because he knew he suckered him into that play. So the guy's got to play more under control. But we've got a good defense with Navarro. He can stop him, but he can't get that pass up front. Pineda has got to pick up his pushing that ball up front. We had a situation, Nick, where our boy Chiquire, he was out again. I knew this was going to happen when they signed him this summer. The guy's got a history of leg injuries. He's got these huge thighs they keep talking about, but they're always pulling muscles. Hopefully he'll be back this week, but if not, we'll get Brian Gutierrez back, who's our hopeful midfielder for the future. You know, up front, Chabilko, gosh, he had a breakaway, a 2-on-1, being the one was the goalie. And what does he do? He dribbles the ball right into the goalie's hands. I mean, Ivanov was kind of looking at him like, dude, I'm standing right here. But he put his head down. Goalie came out, picked the ball right off his foot. So we are struggling up front. And Ezra, you know, must not have much faith with the guys on the bench. He's starting Bornstein, a 38-year-old fullback up front. So there's something going on where guys like Offer, Andrew Reynolds, these guys, they just don't have the talent, I believe, to compete in this league. So later on in the game, he took off Bornstein, switched sides with Ivanov, and puts Espinosa up front. Espinosa is a fullback. So we've got a center forward and virtually two fullbacks up front. Espinosa is, I don't see the talent in this young man. He's got a lot of speed. He dribbles the ball way far in front of him. He has not done much on the field. And then he puts in Andrew Reynolds, and Reynolds, as the announcer said, how long do you stay with a guy, a homegrown, after 3 years? He just doesn't seem to have the speed to be in this league. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but nice guys lose in this league. So every substitute we put on the field did not perform. Duran, at the very end, I could see that talent starting to come. We've got to put him out on the field. You can't. I know that Ezra probably was mad that he had two yellow cards in the first two games, but you got to coach these guys up, and we've got to have somebody that's dangerous up front. Chiquita's not playing, and the combination of Pineda and Navarro, Jimenez had a good game, but he played the number nine position. So we had a really disconnect in the midfield, a real obvious disconnect, which the Fire can't keep going with that disconnect. I look at the standings. The Fire today are in seventh place, which is playoff position. They're stuttering. They're not scoring, the Fire, and the other teams are starting to move. Even Miami is starting to use their talent and starting to come. So, you know, where they're going, something has to stop and turn around, meaning they got to start scoring goals. Now, I have to mention this, Nick. I keep looking at the other leagues, and one of the guys I really enjoyed with the Fire who didn't get a shot was Mihaljevic, Jordi Mihaljevic. And he is turning into probably the best center midfielder in the league. He's carrying Montreal. He's playing out of this world. He's probably going to be on the U.S. Cup. And our GM traded him off for nothing, for $600,000 or whatever. You know, we're struggling to find a replacement for him. He signs an old Swiss guy or an injured Swiss guy. And obviously that's not working. So, you know, I hope the Fire can turn it around, but if they don't, I certainly hope the owner changes GM. I mean, look at the crowd that was at the field to see Chicharito. 30,000 people. Now, we're bringing in a young Mexican man from Atlas May the 1st. Will he have the popularity of Chicharito? No. But Chicago should be, every time we lose, I mean, when we had Cuauhtemoc Blanco, you couldn't get into the season, or it was sold out numerous times. Why are we bringing in these end-of-career European players? It doesn't make sense. We want this team to thrive and to be a star in Chicago. So they're in seventh place. They got to turn it around against Minnesota. We get Gutierrez back. Hopefully Herbert's hip is better. We need more professionalism on the left side rather than a 38-year-old fullback. So, Nick, great to see you come back. Let's go Fire. Oh, one other thing. They're playing this championship game Tuesday night. I don't know who they're going to use on this. Their MLS2 team has not done well. So the guys that are underneath the bench players are not performing that well. So let's hope that we get some guys returning and we get some midfield play to support those forward lines. And hopefully Duran starts playing the way he was advertised last year. Thanks a lot, Nick. Have a good day.
All right, fans, we are back from our break. Thank you again, John, for sending us that clip, all things Chicago Fire. I hope you enjoyed it. I love listening to John's in-depth insight. He actually had played professionally at one point in his life, so he brings a unique perspective, especially as a lifelong Chicago Fire follower. So thanks again, John. Really appreciate that. Now let's get back into some of the other MLS games. One I know Mike was really locked into. You guys had a great watch-along. I popped in for a little bit. Toronto FC hosting and defeating the Philadelphia Union 2-1. Goals by Jimenez and Pozuelo. And man, that Pozuelo one was beautiful. I think he danced past at least four defenders and probably had some movement before receiving the ball that put him by another two. So he took six defenders and the goalkeeper on en route to that game winner. Philadelphia does get on the board. Julian Carranza in the 34th minute. But again, not enough for Dupe to get a point in this game. Let's take a quick look at some of the stats here, right? Possession, slight edge to Toronto. Not as many shots, twice as many shots for Philadelphia, but it doesn't matter. It's the scoreboard that matters. And as we've seen already this weekend, teams have not had very high expected goals. So are they getting into good areas? Maybe this is a league trend. If anyone has the extra time or mathematical talent, why don't you check out expected goals from around the league for a trend period of time, right? Again, though, great passing game, though not an accurate game. Was it sloppy? I didn't get a chance to watch too much of this game. Was it sloppy? Did it look bad to all of you out there? Let us know in the chat, in the comments. Like, was something going on up at BMO? Anyway, 4-1 yellow cards. That's interesting. A lot of yellow cards around the league this week. Let's take a quick look at some of the other advanced stats. Toronto, again, getting into the box. Same with Philly. Really getting into the box. They don't like to shoot from far very often. They like to try and play a lot of passing, inner working, give and go, 1-2 type stuff, getting the ball inside the box, but it just has not been working, at least not been working for Philly in this game. Now here, here's the exact opposite of what I was thinking was going to go on. Toronto with only 0.4 expected goals. Meanwhile, the Philadelphia Union with over 2 expected goals this game, and the scoreline ends up the opposite way, 2-1 in favor of Toronto. So Toronto took advantage of those stats, of their opportunities. And again, that Pozuelo goal, the fact that he dribbled through four defenders, that is an extremely low chance of success, which is why, even though he did score that goal, the expected goal stat is very deflated. A couple notes I've got on this one. Again, great watch along. Great to see the Reds get another win. Philly, stagnant on offense. And I thought maybe a struggling TFC defense could be the medicine that they needed. One on Philly's goal, though, there were about 6 TFC players in the box to Philly's 3. So they were able to really make the best of a well-defended situation. But man, again, those Toronto goals, beautiful. We talked about Pozuelo's, but Osorio's passing on that first one, fantastic. Keep an eye on him. There's a reason why Canada looks so good right now on the national stage. Also for TFC, keep your eyes on their young player, Nelson. He's a good young talent, but I feel like maybe this is just my recollection, my viewing, or maybe I'm just getting the headlines here. For every great shot or great play he makes offensively, I feel like he like 2 foots a guy or comes in high and like picks up a yellow or possible red. So if he can curb that and keep what he's doing on the offensive end, I think he's going to be a great, great player. Next game on the slate was Chicago and LA. 0-0 draw in Soldier Field. We did not get the Shaqiri Chicharito matchup that we were all hoping for. Shaqiri was held out. Coach's decision, strained calf, tightness in his calf. Again, thank you to John Donovan for providing the full recap as well as kind of a look forward that he usually does for this game. Also, if you want to get into some more statistical analysis, over on my channel, wife.children.house, those backdraft Chicago Fire recaps that I do, we break down, we even take a look at winger Stanislav Ivanov in some detail because he was catching a lot of flack on social media for a subpar performance. So we take a look and see where he fits in amongst the Chicago team. Now, moving right along, DC thought that they were going to win one at home against Austin, who has been the surprise team of the season, I think. But DC lets it all slip away. I mean, the scoreline right here on this homepage says it all for you, right? Kamara with a first half brace and a first half red card. And then Austin is able in the last 10 minutes of the game to drop three and steal a win from DC. So it was Kamara's performance, both for the goal scoring and for the red card, that really got the attention and really was kind of the driving factor in this game. I think his first yellow card was taking his shirt off when he scored one of his goals, and then his other foul, which was deemed by the referee, I think, to be denying an opportunity to advance the ball. You know how Pro is put a point of emphasis on breaking up those attacking motions. So when you see a counterattack go, professional foul, tactical foul, you bring the guy down from the back. Those are like straight yellow cards right now, automatic yellow cards. And the league's not having any of that. They want to see attack. They want to see offense. And they don't want to see their players get endangered, brought down. Think NFL horse collar rule, horse collar tackle, right? These are fouls from the back, bringing players down. Not necessarily slide tackles and ankle-breaking moves, but grabbing guys by the shoulders, tugging on their jerseys, wrapping them up. It's a player safety initiative. So from that sense, I get it. But I do think it is very harsh. And we saw it last week for Brian Gutierrez in Chicago. I do think it's very harsh where you kind of like, you know, you do that little joke where you like tap him on the right shoulder and duck around left. Like you do something like that just enough to throw the guy off. That's a yellow card. I think the league's got to take a closer look at it. But anyway, that's my officiating rant for right now. Let's get back to DC and Austin. As you can see, Austin controlled the game. Look at all the green. Look at all those green bars on this bar graph here. Possession, shots, shots on goal, passing accuracy, total passes. They ended up taking control of this game in the second half, right? And let's take a look here at we see those possession intervals. Yep, here we go. You can see that second half was all Austin, and they finally break through in the 80th minute and then score again in the 85th and in the 90th. Now, look at those expected goals. We finally had some goal scoring this week in MLS, right? A 5-goal exciting match. Austin gets the win. I got to say, as far as Austin, like I love watching Maxi Urruti play, like cuz he's always about to do something probably spectacular, either spectacularly great or spectacularly failing. But he didn't actually get on the score sheet here. It was such a team effort from an offensive perspective, and I love that that's how they're developing the identity. And this is a very much a rallying cry game for them. When they are, you know, 3-4 weeks on in the season or getting ready in a playoff game or the doldrums of MLS summer, and they're down, they're not feeling it, they can point to this game and say, we came back and hung three on a good team away in the last 10 minutes of the game to win it. We can overcome whatever situation's in front of us. So this is a huge moral and soccer victory for Austin. Other thing, you guys want to go back and check these standings out again? Scrolling down. Look at that. LAFC and Austin FC 1-2 in the standings. Would you have picked that before? I don't think so. I probably wouldn't have picked half these standings. And if you guys remember me from way back in the day when I was hosting the podcast with Mike and we were just getting started, I could never pick the standings. I was terrible at that. Thank goodness Mike has gotten so much better and does his betting picks and predictions every week. So if you want a preview of what's going to happen next week and who you think is going to win and how you should bet it, definitely subscribe to the channel and tune into Mike's picks and predictions. Now let's get to the last game on Saturday. Minnesota is back on track. Trounson, Colorado, 3-1. DeBassi, Ludd, and Dunlady all get on the board for the Loons. Rubio gets the goal for Colorado, but the story here is Bebe Reynoso, 3 assists. When he is just dishing passes like that, dishing dimes, I don't know, can we say that? Dishing dimes? Is that more of a basketball thing? Anyway, when he's on his game, playing his best game, Minnesota's offense just looks fantastic. Even though the possession was about even as well as a lot of the other offensive statistics here, passes, shots, shots on goal, passing accuracy, all that good stuff, Minnesota was the one that converted their chances. Look at that. They're getting 3 goals in the box to Colorado's 1 goal in the box, even though Colorado was able to get in some dangerous areas. Now let's take a look at that expected goals, right? Both teams creating excellent chances, 2.5 XG for Minnesota and 2.1 XG for Colorado, but it was Minnesota that finished them. I hate to say this, Rapids fans, and I hate to say this, you know, Colorado as a founding franchise, but to me, it increasingly looks like last season for Colorado when they finished atop the West, that was more of the exception than the rule. Now, Robin Fraser's done a great job when he's not insulting Greek people. He's doing a great job coaching the Colorado Rapids and really creating a great atmosphere and instilling a great soccer culture with them. And his tactics are good, but I just think that maybe they don't have the talent. Maybe they just don't have the caliber of players and DPs like we're seeing some of these other clubs have. But these projects take time, right? Colorado was not good for long stretches of time. It's going to take time for them to be consistently good. All right, everyone. Oh, I'm sorry. Here was the last match of the weekend. I was probably in bed before this match wrapped up. Seattle hosting and losing to Inter Miami. Guys, Inter Miami's got a win streak going here. 2 in a row for the Herons. Yeah, they're the Herons, the Pink Herons. That's it. Yeah. Inter Miami with the goal, Robbie Robinson. Great to see him scoring, getting back into form. Kind of a bit of a letdown for Seattle, but you know what? After taking care of business against NYCFC in the CONCACAF Champions League semifinals, maybe you kind of expect it. You hope you don't have it happen at home. But regardless, a 1-0 loss to an increasingly heating up, better Inter Miami team, desperate Inter Miami team. Maybe not the worst thing in the world. It's cross-conference game, so they're not dropping as many points to conference opponents. And as far as the standings go, Seattle in 11th place, though. So they could have used this as a good opportunity, but you know what? Seattle's never missed the playoffs since joining the MLS, and I wouldn't put it past them to miss it this year. No, actually, I would put it past them to miss it. That's what I was trying to say. They're going to get in. They're going to get better. They're going to win Champions League, and then all will be right in MLS and Seattle Rave Green world. But look at these stats here. Seattle controlled large stretches of this game, 60% possession, 20 shots, but only 3 on goal, which leads me to believe that these were not the best or opportunity, you know, or just kind of opportunistic shots here, right? Despite having 20 shots, 3 on net, only an XG of 1.1. So let's go back and find that map of where their shots were. Yep, look at that. All low percentage chance shots, right? This would be the equivalent of an NBA player, you know, with his heels on the three-point line. Like, dude, take an extra step back, shoot the three. Why are you taking extremely long-range jumpers, right? This is what Seattle was doing here. Now, maybe Miami's defense was playing pretty well. Only 1 block shot, though, so I can't say that. I think maybe Seattle just kind of got a little trigger happy. Again, I didn't get a chance to watch the game, those late-night Pacific Coast games. So let us know in the comments, in the chat, what you thought was going on in Seattle. Now we got a couple other games that were played today on Sunday. This one was a shock. I mean, I'm not surprised NYCFC beat RSL. I'm not surprised Tati scored. But I am surprised Tati scored 4 en route to a 6-0 victory over Real Salt Lake. for the Pigeons of New York. He is back in form. He's back in his Golden Boot race. I don't think he'd had a goal since this season. I don't think Tati has scored this season. If he did, it was only one. So now he's got four, two of them from the PK spot, two of them from open play. When he is feeling good, he is feeling good, and there is not a defense or keeper that can stop him. Just for good measure, Andrade does add two more, and this game looked like all New York from the start. Despite the possession numbers, look at the passing. 513 New York passes to 383 from Salt Lake, or 382 from Salt Lake. That is like an average to bad game for a lot of teams. The Chicago game that produced zero goals, they were in the 300s for passing, 380s for passing too. So Salt Lake, I think maybe New York just ceded some possession at the end. Let's kind of see. Yep. That last 5 minutes of the game, I'm sure that's where RSL probably had a lot of their passes. Now, again, let's go take a look at some of our shots. The XG on this one. Wow, New York City, even with six goals, outperforming the XG and RSL underperforming it. Let's see if this gets New York back on track, back to their winning ways that we are all accustomed to seeing. And the final game of the weekend, LAFC beats Kansas City 3-1 out in Los Angeles. And it was interesting, the headline on MLSsoccer.com was LAFC comes back, come from behind victory. Come from behind victory. It was an own goal in the 38th minute, and then they equalized it 6 minutes later. So I wouldn't say LAFC is getting this great come from behind victory, but it was a great win for them nonetheless. Here you go, taking a look at the stats. Fairly even in most categories. Both teams completing a lot of passes in this game, which is probably great and exciting to watch. As you can see, LAFC getting into some dangerous areas, whereas Sporting Kansas City with very, very few opportunities. Checking out the XG again, LAFC making the most of their opportunities, whereas Kansas City had that one, and that was about it. Kudos to LAFC, but I wonder if Kansas City's window has closed. Are they going to be competing for trophies this season? Doesn't look like it. Are they going to be competing for trophies the next two, three seasons? I would hesitate to say yes. Now, I've learned never to bet against Peter Vermes, but, man, if you remember some of my picks over the last few years for Kansas City to win a trophy, I've also learned never to bet on Peter Vermes in Sporting Kansas City. I am a total betting neutral when it comes to Kansas City. But, you know, I'll go check out Mike's betting picks and predictions. Maybe he can give you a little bit more insight and tell you how to play a Kansas City game. Now, those are all the games from this weekend, everyone. Reminding you, we got the U.S. Open Cup. We've got games on the 19th and 20th of April. MLS teams have joined the tournament finally, and we can see them taking on the likes of USL. And I can't even remember if an NASL team got in. Wouldn't surprise me if I did. As you know, the U.S. Open Cup, every team in the country essentially is eligible to play in it. I do a YouTube video, the brief history of the U.S. Open Cup, over on my channel, Wife Children House. So go find that. Just some more housekeeping before we go. Gotta leave a tidy house before we leave, right, everyone? Like the video, subscribe to the channel, share the link, continue the conversation, go get some merch. We have been getting pictures from, no joke, all over the world of people wearing Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central t-shirts to games. I think someone sent Mike even a picture from Stamford Bridge, Chelsea Stadium, right? There's a Chelsea fan wearing SOP gear sending pictures in. So find your gear, write into Mike. You know what? You might be able to persuade him to give you a discount on some merch if you can send in pictures of it at whatever game you're at, whatever stadium around the world that you are. So anyway, support Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. And if you like how I talk, if you like hearing some statistical analysis in with some of the play-by-play highlight type stuff, definitely go find me on YouTube at the Wife Children House channel. I do a Chicago Fire recap backdraft every week, as well as some other soccer sketch comedy videos and the like. And I'm also on Twitter at Wife Kids House. I'm also happy to say that I just broke 100 subscribers on YouTube. So hopefully no one unsubscribes and we can keep that century mark there. Guys, I got to say, it's great to be back. with Sons of a Pitch again, I got to thank everyone who has been messaging me over the last year when I haven't been a regular on the show or haven't even been affiliated with the show at all. Rocky, Jay, really appreciate your guys' messages. It's been great hearing from you. And Jay, the messages you sent back in December regarding my mom, I can't thank you enough, man. It meant the world to me to hear from you. But SO peeps, great to be back. Looking forward to seeing you all on a weekly basis. Until next week, enjoy the matches, enjoy the matchups. Thanks again, everyone. Great to see you all.